and the NDC have occupied the majority side of the House. On your screens now is Alexander Fayomarkin. He is a leader of the MPP caucus in Parliament. He's addressing a news conference. Let's listen in.
Vacated their seats. Proud to his decision, I had brought to his attention that there was a pending suit at the Supreme Court, which pending suit was to seek certain interpretation of Article 97. In fact, Mr. Speaker himself acknowledged that on the floor of the House. As a result of his decision, the majority caucus expressed a disagreement with his decision and gave a clear indication that the matter will be pursued further at the Supreme Court. So on Friday, another process was filed by me, and the Supreme Court, in a unanimous decision, determined the matter and ruled, among others, that one, Speaker's interpretation of the law was wrongful, and that the Supreme Court was staying his decision pending the final determination of the case. In other words, his earlier decision, in effect, that those four MPs, that is MP for Fomina, MP for Aguna West, MP for Suhum, and Amenfi Central, had vacated their seat, was nullified, in essence. We are law-abiding. We have heard that our colleagues say they disagree with the Supreme Court. They've been using unprintable words on the Supreme Court. On Sunday, the minority leader, my respected colleague, Dr. Forson, led the minority caucus in a press conference, whereupon they told Ghanaians that today they will come and occupy our seats by their own proclamation. MPP, our tradition is a law. Our forebears always use the courts to correct the wrong. Since 1992, our leaders have always used civil advocacy and the courts to ensure that we get the peace that we have today. On top of my head, I can recall the era where we used thumbprint ID cards and we used opaque ballot boxes. All these are things of the past today because of MPP. Today, we have a very transparent electoral system because of the advocacy of our forebears. It's our turn in leadership. The country is hereby informed that we will not give that lawless platform that NDC is seeking. We will not give them that platform. We will not give them that theater they so aggressively seek. Disrupt democracy and to destroy our nation. We know there are innocent people out there, innocent Ghanaians going about their business, innocent Ghanaians in the academia, innocent Ghanaians who are struggling to get 3 square meals on the table for their families. We care about them. We understand that there is politics, but we must do it in a civil manner. We believe that the appropriate thing is to quietly yield to them and wait upon Mr. Speaker. After all, the ruling was directed at Parliament and the Speaker, not an individual MP. Yesterday, the bailiff of the Supreme Court served Parliament of Ghana through the legal directorate, the director of the legal department received the ruling of the court. So, in other words, Mr. Speaker is on constructive notice, or maybe I should say actual notice of the ruling of the court. We have to leave it there and respect Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker has been part of our democracy since 1992. He's a senior lawyer. He's practiced in our court. And I believe that even if Mr. Speaker disagrees with the Supreme Court, he knows what to do. Suffice to state, at the risk of being repetitive, that we were not disrespectful of the chair when the Speaker made his pronouncement and the majority caucus disagreed with Mr. Speaker. We didn't cause commotion here. We left quietly and told Mr. Speaker that the right place to express those grievances will be at the court. So we expect our brothers and our sisters on the NDC minority side to do the needful. But all would be for Mr. Speaker to make a final determination. The nation is looking up to Mr. Speaker. All his years in politics, this is a crucial moment for him to add weight to what we have done to preserve the peace. MPP is for peace. MPP is for peace. MPP is for peace of Ghana. We will not allow anybody to disturb the peace of the country. It is a notorious fact that we remain the majority caucus of this parliament. You, the media, must add your voice to the advocacy to compel our colleagues to respect the fidelity of the law. I have heard a respected colleague on their side, Honorable Dr. Ayini, calling on Mr. Speaker to respect the Supreme Court decision. If that is true, then that's a noble call from him. Dr. Ayini is somebody I respect because of his respect for the law. I believe that moderates on the side of NDC will prevail on the hawks in their party to call them to order. So I would want to thank you for being with us. We are leaving this chamber peacefully into our offices. Await Mr. Speaker's arrival, and if he calls leadership and we do pre-sitting discussions, we'll take it up from there. But for now, that lawless theater will not share with them, because Ghana, our country Ghana, is bigger than any one individual. So we would want to, at this point, sing our party's anthem to let you know who we are. Colleagues,
we are the new, we are the new Patriotic Party. We are the new, we are the new Patriotic Party. The elephant is a winning symbol. We have won to save Ghana. The elephant is a winning symbol. We shall won.
So you have the NPP MPs who just left the chamber of the house. They say that they are not going to give in to the NDC. There's not going to be any violent confrontations in the simple. And they are chanting their party anthem as they walk out of the chamber to other place. You hear the NDC MPs jeering them. They are jeering them. They are asking. They are jeering them. And so that is said to be the showdown here. They say that they're not going to give in to the NDC. And then as far as they are concerned, what they're going to ensure is that the proceedings will not be disrupted. You hear NDC MPs clapping away as NPP MPs walk out. NDC MPs have also started beginning to chant a few of their revolutionary songs. And that is the situation as we have in Parliament. The majority leader, Les Anafenyo Makin, just finished addressing the press here in Parliament, insisting that they consider themselves the majority and will not concede that to the NDC. But for now, they are not going to give in to the NDC for now. They are going to their offices up until the Speaker of Parliament takes his seat. And when he does take his seat and offers directions on what should happen next, then they will return to the House. So that is how far the situation is. This is Joy News Desk here on the Joy News Channel. The NDC have now been left to be the ones who have taken their seats on the majority side in Parliament. And they say that everything points that they are the real majority. Now they are singing the national anthem, insisting that they are the majority in the House. Chaotic scenes that was expected hasn't happened. It hasn't happened at all. Just the NDC MPs having taken over the majority seats. And they say they are going to take that seat. There's absolutely no way they are going to hand that over back to the NPP. So, that is the situation here in Parliament. For those of you who are just catching up, it's been said to be a really confrontational sitting where the NDC and MPP all claiming the majority side. About 8 o'clock a.m. today, the doors to the Chamber of Parliament was opened and the NDC and MPP MPs all walked in. The NDC MPs who have arrived here this morning in their numbers, they take over the majority side and are still seated. In fact, they are still seated on the right-hand side of Mr. Speaker, and we are waiting for 10 o'clock. It's actually past 10 now. That is the time proceedings was expected to start. It just hasn't started. There were a couple of NPP MPs who were seated up until the leader of the NPP caucus, Alexander Afenyo-Makin, came in and came to talk to some of his colleagues and then decided to address the media. The substance of the interaction with the media is that they consider themselves the majority. However, they are not going to conduct themselves in any way that will lead to violent confrontations on the floor of the House, for which reason they decided that they will leave the Chamber of Parliament, which is at the Accra International Conference Center, the Dome, and go back to their offices and wait for the Speaker of Parliament to come. When the Speaker of Parliament takes his chair, perhaps will call them for a pre-sitting. If he does call them for a pre-sitting, they will definitely talk among each other. And if there's any resolution to this impasse, they will do that. But the NDC MPs still on the floor of Parliament, chanting revolution songs, speaking the Arise Ghana Youth, and they say this is the moment that they really have taken over the majority in Parliament, and that is not something that they are willing to give up at all. There's a rolling coverage right here on Joy News where there's a lot of controversy in Parliament as to who exactly is. You see Sam George leading the chorus and NDC MPs really marching on the floor of the House. It's really fun times here for them on the floor of the House, because for most of them, they've gone back to their secondary school days where there's really a march fast going on with Sam George leading. There's a lot happening on the floor of Parliament today. A day that has been said to be the country at the precipice of chaos, Ghana's democratic credentials being challenged. But so far it has been handled pretty well. The NPP MPs have come in and they've said that that's why they are disagreement. They are not going to stay on the floor. They've left to their offices. But the NDC MPs remaining, you see a candle there. You see MP for Madina, Francis Egyasosu. You see a number of them really remembering their JHS and SHS days where they have marched past. They are not relenting. There's a lot of singing and chanting on the floor of the House as they wait for the Speaker of Parliament, Alban Bagbin, to come in to gavel the House in session. It's so far not been confrontational. There's not been a single confrontation except the one that happened around 8 a.m. when they were walking in, when two MPs had a little confrontation at a check at a security screening door. But it has largely been peaceful. It's been fun, if I'm allowed to put it that way, with MPs on both sides claiming the majority side in Parliament. And we'll try and get you some interviews and try and see what the situation is with both sides doing so. when a speaker comes in, ultimately, because it's 10 o'clock and any moment from now, we will expect that a speaker will walk in. When he does, what we will expect is the speaker to inform the House if he's so minded to do, whether or not the Supreme Court has served him with the order they made on Friday. The majority leader, you heard him there say that that order has been served on Parliament. And so the expectation will be that at least the Speaker of Parliament will comment on it and whatever consequential directives he may be reminded to give. Mind you, there are efforts underway between yesterday and now to file some applications also at the Supreme Court to stay that order that has been made by the Supreme Court. So a lot of stay of execution applications flying all over the place. But as of yet, that has not been filed. And what that means, constitutionally and legally speaking, is that that order declaring 4 seats vacant by the Speaker has been stayed by the Supreme Court, which means the status quo prior to Thursday has been restored and that the NPP are the minority, strictly speaking, by the Supreme Court declaration that they made last week. But the NDC MPs say until the Speaker of Parliament communicates to them, that is not something that they are willing to. They are not willing to go by because they do not take orders from the Supreme Court, from social media. They only do so if the Speaker of Parliament communicates to them. So the Speaker of Parliament ultimately, and a lot hinges on the Speaker of Parliament and his pronouncements and declarations that he will make today. And when he comes in and he makes those declarations and he sets the stage properly for what we will see, then we can take it from there. So Faustina and our colleagues on News Desk, that is the situation here in Parliament. Just a recap of what has happened in the last few minutes. The majority leader, Alexander Afenyo-Makin, has come in. He has addressed journalists. He says that they consider that they are still the majority given the order of the Supreme Court. They are not going to give that up, but they are not going to stay on the floor and lead to confrontations with their colleagues. And so they are going back to their offices and wait for Mr. Speaker to come in for their usual prayer sitting. They will try and see if some agreements can be reached. If those agreements are reached, then so be it. If the agreements are not reached and it has to be, then they will not be part of it. And so they've left now. But a lot of NDC MPs on the floor. Every person you see on the floor now from your shots is an NDC MP. And they came in this morning, their numbers, to do one thing, to take over the majority side. And they've succeeded in doing so. And between now and when the Speaker of Parliament comes in and perhaps makes some consequential directions as to what exactly should happen, they say that they are the majority and will not give in to any person who will seek to take their rightful place, that is the majority side, from them.
Thank you, Koko Asante, for bringing us that update. We're just telling what exactly is happening in Parliament. Initially, both the NDC and the NPP MPs, they occupied the majority side of Parliament. Then we saw Alexander Afenyo-Makin addressing the media. He says, quote, they will not partake in this lawless theater, referring to what is happening on the floor. Currently, they have left the chamber. They say they're going to their offices. They're hoping that the Speaker will respect the Supreme Court's ruling. Will the Speaker do so? That's something we're yet to find out. But I have in the studio Raymond Akwa and Winston Amwa. Winston heads our political desk and Raymond Akwa our research desk. Well, there are some people that argue that the Supreme Court erred in its ruling because it lacks jurisdiction. We've heard our NDC friends, lawyers, talk about lacking jurisdiction, and they quote Article 99 of the Constitution. Is that the case?
Now, there is something more important than the conversation about whether or not it has jurisdiction. And forgive me, because I'm actually drilling that what's happening now. Two things are key here. First and foremost, and I've said it consistently, even if you disagree with what the Supreme Court has said, there are avenues for you to challenge that. If you think that it is so absurd a decision that it can never be corrected, I do believe that we have established for ourselves a jurisprudence that allows that the final say at that level is the Supreme Court of the Republic of Ghana. So, please, let's not dismiss these claims. Let's not get it wrong. Let's not have doubts about the relevance of that institution in our jurisprudence. Let's also not get it wrong. that I can have very serious problems with it. And I've heard people raise that serious issue. Can I remember that at any point in time, file a case at 10 a.m. on Friday and get that case heard the same day? And we have seen others try. People tell, oh, it's possible. We have tried that. We say justice ought not to be done alone, but ought to be seen and manifestly seen to be done. If there are difficulties with, and many people have raised it, again, there is also the general clamor. And if Afrobarometers reports anything to go by, the judiciary, the police, and also the electoral commission, the trust of the public in these institutions is an all-time low. And I wrote a story on it, stipulating over the period how it's dipping and how it's gone to extremely low. So if you have an institution that's gotten its trust levels go this low, the essential understanding is that you want to improve it. Did this conduct of the judiciary improve trust in the institution? I'm not even talking the substantive issue. Because I think it is possible for a court to make some of these orders. But as to whether it is reasonable, it is fair and candid, as Article 29 says, in the performance of your discretionary powers, even as a court, it must be fair, candid, and reasonable. You let me pretend that the jury is still out there on whether or not that decision was fair, candid, and reasonable. I am expecting that we do not create a chaotic situation where today the people in my hometown feel that a decision of the court does not go their way. It is preposterous, it's outlandish, and they have all the words you can use to describe it. And we decide that we do what we want to do. Or protest, and I'm not saying protest is wrong, or protest by deciding not to comply with it. What we can do, unfortunately, by the structures we have put together as a state, is to comply with the available alternatives here. For example, file a case to contest it. For example, ask that the issue be remedied one way or the other. So there are remedies still within our judicial system to correct this. Know why this is important? Many people believe this was an unjust ruling. Justice is key. But if we allow people saying that I will not comply with it to stand, it may mean that the court can give just rulings, and yet people will still say that I feel, and that's the key word there, I feel, or I think, or I disagree with it, but I will not exhaust the remedies available in law to me. I will go against that. That will be problematic. So that's why we should sit with this conversation. We are not just having a conversation about whether or not who says left or right in parliament. We are having a conversation about what in the United Kingdom they call the fundamental principles of state. What is separation of powers? Baron de Montesquieu conceived that. But at the core of separation of power is the other principle, checks and balances. So that in our system, no institution, be it the executive president who leads the executive, feels that they are too superior or they are above the other one. Simply put this way, someone is to make the law, Parliament of the Republic of Ghana. Another person's job is to interpret the law. The people who made the law can feel that your interpretation is completely absurd. It's nonsensical. It doesn't make sense. But it is somebody else's job to do the interpretation of the law, even if you disagree with it. Again, enforcement and executive powers are enshrined in another branch's role. If one branch feels that the conduct of the other is impeaching on this way, it is the responsibility of taking back to that particular judiciary. And let's not pretend that the five that sat and made the decision, that is the entirety of our judiciary. There are other people within that same scope that can give a different verdict on what has happened. I hope we are getting the scope properly. If the availability or if the alternative is there for you to explore that, we should not, and we are barely 2 months into the new election. The things that should be occupying our time, with all due respect, is whether or not we are fashioning a way out of the various options on the table for a better Ghana. Whether or not we have enough money to pay the debts that will be accruing the next few years to come. The prosperity of the people, and I'm not leaving out justice, because I am one of those who think that without justice, no state can prevail. And justice is in so many forms. So we should be looking at some of these issues and how to build proper structures as a state. Not really spending quality time on who sits where, who marches into parliament when. And see, let's not get it wrong, Winston. This is the final point I'm making on this. The picture we paint either strengthens or undermines the democracy. These are democracy I consider it to be a Trojan horse democracy, a pretentious one. But when we paint the picture that we cannot even agree on where to sit, how to sit, or what to do, not on the substantive issues of what you are going to do in parliament, that signal you are sending to the ordinary people is that you are not serious about that. And let's not get it wrong. The Afrobarometer also suggests that on the continent, increasingly, people are becoming disinterested or less interested in democracy as a solution to building a better state for them. Some of these things participate or add up to it. So it is a threat to the entirety of that political class. And they should be equally minded by that. And not just be thinking, oh yeah, my position and the only thing that's important is who votes where on December 7th. In any case, we have seen over the years, when they get a power, what they do with it? We end up with domestic debt exchange and all the other debt exchanges. We end up in an economic situation that's terrible. Those are conversations that should be occupying our primary time as a people, not some of the things that are not as relevant. And even so, this is not even a principle-based debate.
And are we
those
coming? Are we
not even debating on principle. Exactly. They're just saying.
Are we coming to you shortly? Are we coming to Winston as well? I'm told I have very long one. I must say, I have Professor Kwesi Anin. He is a security and political analyst. He joins the conversation by phone. Thank you for your time here on NewsDex. You've seen what has played out on the floor of Parliament. For a while now, people have been calling for cool heads to prevail. Security has been tightened in Parliament, but look at the conduct of our MPs. What's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, this fits into a pattern that started already in January 2021, prior to the election of the Speaker. The rowdiness, the sacrilegious invasion of Parliament by the military that has never been investigated as to who issued that order, who told them to disperse and to leave, and what the impact has been on our parliament, and the possibility that the next time such a sacrilegious invasion takes place, the people may not leave. Not only that, we've also seen very disturbing rowdy rioters' behavior over time, sometimes the passing of bills that are detrimental to the long-term, you know, stability and functioning of the state. I want to give two examples. One is the LI that permitted the mining in our river. The second one relates to that ally that to that in which parliamentarians sought to flout the traffic regulations as they campaigned. So what we are seeing this morning fits into that pattern in which it is the very short-term, narrow interest of people in the House and not the enterprise called Ghana that drives the behavior and increasingly the decisions that are made. What the signal that this sent is that we are on a nice edge of breaking every single rule, and that the interest of the larger population, those who actually put these 275 people into that house, does not matter. Perception in politics, as in other types of or forms of our experiences, play a very key role. And as a friend of mine just said to me, actually what is happening now is what other African countries will start to use as a quiz as to this country that had this perception or notion of being a stable, functional democracy actually has been underpinned by a lack of respect for the rule of law. That it looks as if it is ruled by law that this parliament seeks. And I want to go back to your previous speaker because he raised really very critical points before I come finally to the security side. Public service is simply what it is, the word service. But it doesn't only come with privileges, it also comes with responsibilities, in which the national interest must always be negotiated around so that we move from a zero-sum game to a win-win, in which Enterprise Ghana is who wins. The blatant perception that we will not follow the interest of Ghana is becoming problematic. You see, when checks and balances, and I think the previous speaker spoke about checks and balances, you know, between the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary, it looks as if those checks and balances have broken down, that there is no respect for the jurisdiction of each of these groups, that each party thinks, look, I am big enough, I do not need to compromise so that there is peace. People do forget that the symbolism and the significance of what people are watching on TV. I unfortunately don't know how to turn on my TV, so I am not watching. But my nephew just sent me the link, so I can watch it on my phone. The symbolism is that people now think, but these are the people who govern us. If they are that rowdy and they don't respect the rules of the game, then what is my business being told to respect the rules of the game? I've also seen people demonstrating and going towards parliament. What if other parties also mobilize and send people there? How will the police act? Now, if the police is not able to deal with an increasingly widespread, you know, disobedience, but the military step in. And if they step in, will they go back home? You know, so what we are seeing is a knife's edge situation in which the bigger issues of the importance of this, the next election, because without all this hullabaloo and disgraceful behavior, the December 7th election was a defining election for this country. What type of governance do we need? What is the nexus between those, the elected, and the government? You know, how do we ensure that checks and balances from civil society or the wider community can rein in the excesses and abuses that we have seen? So to shove all that under the carpet and then to say, which side of the house am I expected to sit, creates an impression that these 275 people are totally oblivious of the crisis in which this country is. As I speak to you now, which side of the house who sit truly does not impact my life at all? What I'm looking for is that there's enough peace and stability and the rule of law and order so that on the 7th of December, I can vote peacefully, come home, see it counted, so that those that we elect as a people, based on their experiences in the last couple of years, will lead this country in a way in which we can heave a sigh of relief. What is happening? Is sending a clear signal to all of us that we are not out of the woods, and actually that we may be getting much deeper into trouble.
Prof, stay with me. Let me come in studio, bring in Winston Ama. Professor Kwesi-Enin argues that this display of lawlessness in Parliament, it's a clear description of how little our parliamentarians feel about our impact, and his concern about peace and security. The minority during their press conference over the weekend, they argued that the speaker has not been provided the ruling from the Supreme Court, hence they still maintain their majority status. The reason why they're acting this way today, but then we heard from Afeyo Markin, he says that the bailiff have actually presented the ruling from the Supreme Court to the legal department. What's your thoughts about this whole back and forth?
You know, Professor Enning makes a point. He's talking, I mean, he talks about the peace and security of this country, which is very important. Mm. And I'm sure Professor Enning would agree that, look, what we're experiencing, and it's, you've seen how the NPP group, let me say NPP group now, because of...
Because right now we cannot even tell who is who.
I mean, no, if I want to... Well, you can tell who is who if you want to. I mean... So, I mean, it's not a big deal. If I refer to the NPP as majority, it's not a big deal because they've gone to court and my position has been to respect the decision of the court. I'm not going to run away from a position I have taken. And when the speaker indicated at the time that the NDC represent the majority, we call them the majority.
Yeah.
And so if the court says that cannot be the case, we've said that, and I've made the point that you can disagree with the court. But my preamble always to a conversation about the judiciary is that it's the only institution, and Professor Enning talks about, you know, sometimes the rule by law instead of a rule of law. But I tell you what I am concerned about, because it talks about the peace and security of this country. Because you see, where there's a feeling of an asymmetrical relationship, people may take attempts to reverse that asymmetrical relationship. And that's what you normally would call insurgency. Some have called it coup d'etats. We'll leave it at that. But this is the point for me. At all points, there must be a grounds for it. And you know what you can do? You can actually create a grounds for it. And so if you are in government, whatever happens, if there's any chaos today, the party to be affected the most will be the NPP. And I'm sure they may have learned lessons from the midnight of January 6th into 7th. And so they say, we believe the speaker will do the right thing. Some have actually said, oh, this is more like a blackmail, saying the speaker is going to do the right thing. So the speaker comes out, it comes to rule in your favor. You've had lots of, conversations about it. I'm not going to repeat the conversation that I've been had about whether or not the speaker sets aside the ruling of the Supreme Court or the, injunction by the Supreme Court. The most important thing today is that, contrary to all that many may have expected, that it was going to be some form of a showdown. And we're having a conversation when we saw the military initially. I said, you don't need the military, but we've been subsequently been told that they were there to sweep, the dome, having been invited by the Speaker of Parliament. That settles it. But this is it for me. At this point in time, it's the most important conversation in this country. A conversation about who constitutes the majority or minority.
The reason why both the NDC and NPP
NDC majority or the NDC minority cannot take any decision, cannot pass any law, which will be binding on anybody. After all, you are with the president's assent, true or false.
True.
If the president hasn't assent to it, what are you going to impeach the president? You don't have the numbers. So what you're going to do is just to actually galvanize your party supporters at best, your core party supporters at best, whom we all know are not enough to win any political party an election. So, yes, I mean, for the optics, it may look nice that, oh, because the NDC had the belief that they should have been the majority right from the beginning, they felt that they had alleged some hand arm twisting here and there. You may want to say that, oh, finally we are majority, but the whole talk about, oh, we are going to repeal the e-levy, we'll repeal the betting tax, so that who would assent to it for you? You repeal the e-levy, I would be happy. But the truth is that the president, this being part of his fiscal plans for the year, is he going to assent to it? I am particularly happy that the NPP side took a decision not to go there to go and fight. I don't know, because you had five of their members there earlier.
Yeah.
And you had seen Raymond Frank Anodompre going in there, grabbing his seat. And I had expected that, all of them were going to show up, which for me would have been problematic. So, look, at the end of the day, our members of parliament, they should be listening to the conversations people are having. Professor Enning has made a point. Today, today, beyond elections, what does our democracy deliver to us? We don't think about that. All we think about is that we have elections and somebody comes into office and that's the end of it. I am concerned because I ask myself that in future, how are my children and grandchildren going to judge this generation of ours? Will they look at me and say, oh, grandpa or daddy, you did well? Or they look at me and say that, grandpa, you failed us and that's why we find ourselves in this situation. Members of parliament should be concerned. They should, by not be having a conversation on how a bipartisanship approach should be taken in the fight against illegal mining. Are they concerned about that? Is the most pressing need in this country today who constitutes the majority in parliament? I am sorry, but I'm not convinced about what the pressing need of this country is. And so, here we are today. I am happy. There's no scuffle in parliament. If the speaker comes and says the NDC is the majority, if he comes and says the NPP is the majority, we move. At the end of the day, let these members of parliament remember that they were voted into office to actually seek the welfare and well-being of their people. They were not voted into office to engage in extreme partisanship, as we have seen in this country. They should be disappointed in themselves, all of them.
Ramanakwa, let me bring you in at this point, because this whole back and forth between the NPP caucus and the NDC caucus in parliament, we've heard from Afenyo Makin saying that they are leaving the floor of parliament to their offices, hoping that the Speaker of Parliament would resolve these issues and also uphold the Supreme Court's ruling. He also lets us know that the bailiff of the Supreme Court has served the legal department of parliament the ruling. Should the Speaker fail to adhere to this ruling, what happens next?
In principle, what would be somebody citing the Speaker of Parliament for contempt? And who compelling the Speaker to appear in court in person to answer the concerns of contempt, being committed to jail for not complying with that? I think that would be pushing the boundaries of this conversation to an extreme end. What I suspect may happen is a speaker will come in and resolve this matter by saying, let the will of the court prevail for now, even if I disagree with it, even if I think it's nonsensical, even if I do not believe the content of that particular ruling reflects modern day law or even what's supposed to be in. I don't know if you get my point. So that's what I expect would happen. I do not, and backbend can be radical sometimes. I do not expect that his level of radicalism would extend to saying, to hell with what the Supreme Court has said. At best, what they will say is, oh, I've not seen it. I am still operating until I get some understanding of what it means and all of those other things. That, for him to throw it out and say it would never be used in this house, will be a bit strange. But it's not out of the picture. Mindful of how partisan we have become as a people. Mindful of, because what will be is he will be flagrantly disrespecting another branch. And I talked about checks and balances. The reason why that theory is important is because one ought to limit the other. If he finds that the conduct of the Supreme Court here was not only limiting but encroaching on the powers of parliament in whichever form, he will state that categorically. But I don't think he will go as far as saying, I am not going to comply at all with what you're saying, or I'm not going to effect this. And let's get something very clear. Bagby knew he could have pronounced changes in the House, but he didn't, after his ruling previously. Because a more tactical approach will be how to manage that situation. After all, how many months to the end of this particular parliament that they are making noise of? I hope you get my point. So I think
let me come in at
cooler heads will prevail.
Yeah.
More likely from the speaker's perspective. He may disagree with the Supreme Court, but still say, I'm staying my hand. I'm waiting further engagement on the matter.
Let me bring in Professor Kwesi at this point. The NDC caucus in parliament, they've advanced the argument that the Supreme Court erred in its ruling because it lacks jurisdiction. They quote Article 99 of the Constitution. It says that the High Court has jurisdiction to hear and determine any question as to whether a person has been validly elected as a member of parliament or the seat of a member of parliament has become vacant. Should the Speaker fail to adhere to the Supreme Court ruling, would he be right?
Look, I think the conversation now moves beyond, you know, these institutions, and particularly the Speaker today, you know, standing his grounds to argue that, look, I also have the right to say A, B, C, D. My understanding of this, and I think one of your previous speakers made this point very strongly, is that all these individuals are in service to the people of Ghana. That when there is a national crisis, that discernment, maturity, humility in the search for what is best for the people that they lead is what should govern and direct their behavior. In interpreting these articles, and I think one of them made this point too, that had the Supreme Court also empaneled different judges, probably we could also have gotten a different decision. So whatever takes place today when the Speaker comes in must be looked at through the larger lens of what is good for Ghana. An unnecessarily strict, stiff, narrow interpretation of what is on paper will not serve this country well. And we are at a tipping point on a very sharp knife edge. I am hoping that whatever decision the Speaker makes will be one that resolves the tension. Because we don't have long to go. And for people that in the village where I am doing field work, these are esoteric conversations that doesn't impact on the price of the basic foodstuffs that they cannot even afford. But they will be very happy to strike a blow at everybody that they think has contributed to bringing this country to its knees. We should not get there. So, I think it's useful for us to have these conversations. Hopefully they are listening to us, as one of your speakers said, and it may help them to get a sense, which I think they know already, of the discomfort and unhappiness and dissatisfaction with where they have brought this country. I think there's collective failure in how and why we have gotten here. And we need maturity, leadership, and discernment to get us out of the hole in which every minute that goes, we are digging ourselves much deeper. I've studied political violence for the past 40 years. It's easy to begin that very slippery, easy slope into disagreement and eventually conflict. Coming out of it is difficult. And with the changing international order, no one is going to spare us at all. Let's be guided by what is in our bigger national interest. Let's be guided by what is happening elsewhere when the international community does not seem to care about. And in terms of our geostrategic importance, on that list of geostrategic hierarchy, we are at the very beginning. And no one will care about us. For the sake of our children, ourselves, and our children's children, let's be guided by our love for Ghana and the discernment of what any misstep might lead us into.
For Ghana, you say we should be guided by, and I have in the studio Evans Mensah, he's head of our political decks. This whole back and forth is all because of the game of numbers. The standing orders of Parliament is clear. Order 109 speaks about the majority rule, and that is why the NDC, they are holding on to the majority status, because they are still living by the Speaker's initial verdict. They claim that the Speaker has not communicated to them the new ruling from Parliament. Hence, they still operate by the Speaker's ruling, which has declared the 4 seats vacant. In this game of numbers, is the NDC right?
This game of numbers, so far, I think there are no winners. Our democracy has been severely tested and is under strain as we speak. Nobody knows how today is going to end. The Speaker really holds the final, I guess, say on this particular matter, how whether or not we are entering into a constitutional crisis or we are going to come out of this as a stronger democracy. We would have learned the lessons from this. And I've read the CDD statement that actually invites us to look at the constitutional provisions that has led us here for further clarity down the line. The NDC and the MPP sides in Parliament will do what politicians do. They will follow the dictates. And that's why you've seen today the busing of party supporters to the precincts of Parliament, because this is partisan politics. And that is how both sides are going to be interpreting the Constitution. Now, the thing, though, we need to reserve some comments for the Speaker, because our constitutional integrity is within his hands. There's never been a day, I believe, in our fourth Republican history, even before this, that a Speaker, everybody, all eyes are on the Speaker. This great country of ours, in terms of where we are in this juncture, his decision, when he walks in very shortly, will decide quite a lot. Will decide whether, and it, cause also because you have party supporters around the precinct, often when you're going to have chaos, we've seen the parliamentarians themselves fighting among themselves in the House. But considering that in the precinct of Parliament, we have party supporters, and yesterday, everybody followed, there was intelligence that the NDC too was, you know, attempting to bus supporters to the venue, and that they had asked every member of Parliament to marshal at least 200 supporters to the precinct. And I believe that's possibly the MPP too had planned that, and we've seen that they've delivered their numbers there. That is the danger. And the Speaker should be aware of this. I'm very, very certain. And yesterday I got a confirmation that statesmen had reached out to him, not only to him. There's a coalition of eminent Ghanaians that had come together. They tried to reach him and to mediate between himself and the Chief Justice. Try to get some outcome that will inure to the benefit of this great country and our democracy. I don't know how successful this has been, but we'll see what he says.
Well, let me come in at this point, Evans. News reaching us is that the Speaker has asked his lawyers to file an action in the Supreme Court to stay the Supreme Court's order. And that's just coming in from our Parliamentary Affairs correspondent, Kwaku Asante. We'll take you to Parliament shortly, but Evans, please make your point.
Yeah, but that's the point. I mean, that developing story is important. Mm. That is the right thing to do.
Mm.
That is the only course of action that a democracy is expected to chart. And we shouldn't follow the what happened in the Capitol in the U.S. where a certain president marched people to the Capitol Hill and led to violence that led to people's dying. We can show the way. And so if he sent his lawyers to the Supreme Court to set this injunction aside, is the right thing to do. Now, it actually then places the burden back on the Supreme Court, because the expeditious nature that they approached the first application with, now we want to see if they're going to apply the same expedition to this application also.
Same day, heard same day.
Yes.
Dealt with dispatch.
Supreme Court five-member panel assembled on Friday to deal with the matter expeditiously.
When it was filed on the Thursday.
Yeah. So it will be interesting. I mean, I agree with you. It's an interesting development. That's if it's filed today, will the Supreme Court be able to equally assemble? Because the precedents you have set, and they said demand they can also make, and I've heard lawyers say,
they must assemble themselves.
Yes, yeah. If you don't do that, you send a different signal to everybody.
So this is interesting. There's another part of this development story that it's important that our correspondent in Parliament is clarifying that his understanding is that this process that the Speaker has asked to be filed may be filed before proceedings begin.
Today.
And the Speaker takes his chair. And I think that is signaling something very clearly. Mm. Once it is filed, he can come to the House and says it has...
Nothing should be done to offend the import of that particular
until it is filed.
So it returns to, I mean, it's status quo ante, right?
Absolutely.
Original declaration that he made.
Stance.
Except that the say that was agreed, that the court agreed to, was to stop him from making those seats vacant.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So the four members of parliament can walk in today and go and sit in their seat.
That's true.
If the Speaker says, I have filed, and by you coming to sit in your seat, you are really defeating the purpose of me filing
this transfer. You
can't sit in your seat.
Which,
it will be an interesting
problem. Wait for me, the fact that our correspondent adds that second bit, and of course, once the Speaker's direction to his lawyers is that I'm waiting for you to file.
Yeah.
You could have gone in there and sat and of course did his
start
work.
The day, yeah.
But once he's asked that, go and file before I get in, clearly you know where this is going. He's going to come and say,
yeah, but
because see, I have filed.
The good thing about this is that you're using law to solve a problem created by law.
So, yes, you see.
No, which is, on the face of it, a very sensible. We were afraid.
We were afraid
that it was going to be two institutions head on.
This is
disregarded.
So, this is a sensible thing to do. Mm. If a Speaker does that, it means that okay. And even if he comes out to say, because of that, my understanding is that these persons cannot come. Mm. That's his understanding because he's resorted to the courts to actually set aside the court's own ruling. While you wait for the court, and we say justice must not only be served, but must be seen as being served, we also now will begin to count down on when the Supreme Court is going to come out and say, okay, we're going to listen to your case. Because if the Supreme Court could do it in the case of the NPP, you expect that they should be able to do it in the case of the Speaker. No problem. But at least, the good thing is that the Speaker, if this is anything he's going to do, is resorting to the courts in dealing with the challenges that the courts may have put in his way. And for me, that's the way to go.
You say the law to fight the law. I'll come back in studio, but let me bring in Dr. Kojo Asante with CDD. And we'll just get an update from Parliament that the Speaker has asked the lawyers, his lawyers, to file an action in the Supreme Court to stay the order of the Supreme Court. You have been calling for cool heads to prevail. What's your thoughts about how things have panned out in Parliament this morning?
Good morning. Yes, I think that is what needed to be done because I think the worry was for the Speaker to ignore the directions of the Supreme Court. That would have been unprecedented because that would have been the Parliament of Ghana ignoring directions from the Supreme Court. And that signal would have been really problematic. It would have been completely unprecedented in the annals of the Fourth Republic. And so that needed to be avoided. Whatever the objections were or disagreements with the judgment of the Supreme Court, the intervention of the Supreme Court, the only recourse was to use that same process to challenge the Supreme Court's own action. And I think one of the options was to apply to set it aside or to go ahead and file the statement of case as had been instructed by the Supreme Court. And so I think this is the right move. And then everything else would flow from there. And I think that would help at least resolve matters in the interim and direct Parliament appropriately.
We've been hearing from Professor Kwesi Enyin this morning, and he argues that the conduct of our MPs in the House is in blatant disregard of law and order. They say that they create the laws, but they fail to respect them. How do you feel we can allow cool heads to prevail in Parliament post this event?
I mean, even in terms of parliamentary practice, I've been really surprised by this whole behavior of the caucuses, because really the issue about minority and majority. So given the Speaker's ruling on Thursday, even if there was a change or a change in the balance of power in Parliament, it had to be communicated by the Speaker as such. There was all this back and forth. Even there were times where MPs were challenging or calling out journalists for not referring to them. But that is not a formal process. That has to be communicated by the Speaker, that henceforth this person is Mr. Majority or Mr. Minority, and that this, because that is how it is done. It doesn't just come out of thin air because a vacancy has occurred, and therefore automatically everybody can hold themselves up or can go and sit left or right. If you recall, when we went through the process in 2021, there was a formal process where the side that had the numbers, once it was determined, would communicate to the Speaker that this is our leader. And the Speaker would communicate that this is the majority leader, this is the minority leader. And then everybody accorded the person the right, you know, titles. So how anybody could be going around just, you know, declaring that I am majority, minority, and therefore acting in this kind of way, I found it really, really strange, and it's completely unnecessary. And even in terms of the court case, given the timelines that the Supreme Court gave, 7 days for statement of case, 7 days for joint memorandum of issues to be settled, within 10, 14 days, this matter could have been clarified, and then whatever procedures of Parliament that are needed to be addressed would have been addressed. Why couldn't anybody wait for these things to be addressed? And with all these things, I am a bit surprised, because 10 days will not, for me, take away anybody's rights or anything within that period. So just restraining ourselves and holding on to allow for some clarity, because there have been a lot of opinion as to jurisdiction, correct interpretation, which are all matters of law that needed to be clarified, which the Supreme Court at the end will still be the best place to go to get those interpretations done. So I think some of this conduct that really has been a lot of, you know, much ado about nothing, really. And we hope that even now we would sort of allow the process to take its rightful course. There are real matters of law that must be addressed. In our statement, we also made the point that we really need to look at the issue about disqualification of, you know, people close to election, because you leave them with no remedy. When Jesse Kwesi was disqualified, at least you could have a by-election. When you do that close election, where 90 days before elections, you cannot hold by election.
Yeah, that's what the Constitution says. You cannot
hold
elections.
Exactly. So there are all these challenges within the Constitution that we need to address, so that it doesn't create these challenges, you know, politically and in terms of our government for us.
We've been hearing from
looking to the future.
We've been hearing from the MPP caucus leader, Alexander Fayomarkin, this morning. He just clarified for us that indeed the bailiff has served